Hello, Joel here. I've got a new book out. It's called Be Funny or Die: How Comedy Works and Why It Matters. And it's about how comedy works and why it matters. Why human beings tell jokes, and then what that tells us about being human beings. So if you're a human being and you enjoy laughing and then want to know what the hell's going on with that, it's probably a pretty good book to read. It's called Be Funny or Die. It's in shops. You can buy it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cheese and Pickle.
Hello, this is Comfort Blanket and I'm Joel Morris. I'm going to be talking to someone who makes cool stuff that I like about some warm stuff that they like. A book or a TV show or a film or a record they go back to again and again for comfort. This time I'm talking to the actor, comedian and broadcaster Tom Price. Tom is possibly best known for being in Torchwood, the Doctor Who show, and he presents the Drive Time show on Magic FM. Tom also devised and presents a brilliant podcast series called My Mate Bought a Toaster, in which he dives into guests' Amazon purchase histories, finds out the rubbish they've picked up, and holds them responsible for their choices. Outside his broadcast work, Tom is a voracious reader and enjoys researching things like the history of the Second World War, and that may be why he's chosen as his comfort blanket the forensic and authentic Second World War series, Allo Allo.
Would you believe it possible that the plot has now thickened? Herr Flick thinks that the General and the Colonel are planning to blow up Hitler. Herr Flick can do nothing about this because he has been imprisoned in the dungeon of the chateau disguised as a woman. If my hands are shaking, it is because Michel of the Resistance, in a plan to blow up the general, placed a bomb in the wheelchair of my wife's mother. Unfortunately, the attempt misfired. And my wife's mother survived. She was last seen disappearing at very high speed with a cloud of smoke coming from the bottom of her wheelchair.
Well, welcome to your house. I've come round to your place.
Thanks.
Because you said you had microphones.
And look, this is a microphone over here.
And I've got one here too. This is amazing.
There's also...
Thanks for laying it on.
You're very welcome. Should we do a dog caveat now?
There are dogs. If you're sensitive to the noise of dogs...
You can be... I wonder if you can be aurally allergic to dogs.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a bit... If you hear dogs, you're not having a stroke.
Yeah.
Well, you might want to have a stroke of the dog. Maybe that'll be what it makes you think of. But there are dogs trying to get into this room.
Yeah, I'm hoping they'll forget and sort of move on and be distracted by something else. That is a good thing about dogs. That's why I like them. That's why I feel like I am a dog, because I'm constantly distracted by something else. So yeah. I'm hoping that...
Someone releases a cat.
That's right. That's right. There's a war of attrition with attention going on and they'll disappear. So there might be dog noises.
Right, okay. And talking of war, we're going to be talking about possibly one of the most harrowing depictions of the war ever put on the screen on British television, because you have chosen for your comfort blanket.
Yeah. Allo Allo.
I mean, what a joy.
I mean, it is constantly on in the Imperial War Museum. If that's what I would do.
Really?
If they could do a guest editor of the Imperial War Museum, I'd just take over the whole basement and we'd just watch René for hours and hours. You know what? You'd learn a lot. Weirdly, you'd learn more about Britain in the 1980s and 1990s than actually the Second World War.
Yeah, it's a lens through which we can see ourselves. Maybe that's what it's for.
Hey, who knew art would offer that up? And that's right. Allo Allo is art.
I was pissing by the door. When I heard two shots. You are holding in your hand a smoking goon. You are clearly the guilty potty.
So is Allo Allo something which you will, if it's on, you will watch it, or do you seek it out? Or is it just something ambiently you're happy is there?
I'm afraid I'm probably going to have to go for option three. Because there's so much stuff to watch. And I've almost got to the point with my cultural addictions now that it's almost like a chore. Do you get this? When you've got a box set, you're like, oh, I've got to get to the end of True Detective because, you know, because I've got to get that done because the new series of Bosch starts quite soon. We're concertinaing back to this idea of maybe there's some format where we could just have a whole story in one episode.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Or, alternatively, if we're talking about the comfort of our lower low, something where it's a meandering story that doesn't matter. You can drop in at any point and it will be in a state of complete stasis.
Yeah, so exactly. And that is a bit like Foyle's War, which famously went on longer than the Second World War.
Or MASH, longer than the Korean War.
Exactly.
What about the cheese?
You may keep the cheese. We could use it to stuff in our ears when his wife sings in the cafe.
I love the idea that it's there. I take comfort from the fact that it's there. I take comfort from how it taught me to enjoy telly and things, and we'll probably get into that. But I have also discovered, and this podcast has cost me, Joel,
right?
Because full disclosure, I'm not being paid for this.
Right.
$5.99 I'm out of pocket because I have now subscribed to BritBox.
Send an invoice in and I'll give you your share of the profits.
I'll send it to you every month. because you know what's going to happen with BritBox. It's going to sit there for months and months and months like a sort of dusty Audible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it'll be on my direct debits and I'll go, oh yeah, BritBox, I should really watch Marple.
But if you cancelled your BritBox subscription, it'll be harder to watch LOLO if you needed it.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I wonder if there's a sort of room of requirement thing going on here, because BritBox specifically, and I think does feed into the theme of your show as well, BritBox is all about comfort.
Yeah.
Comfort box. And I think that knowing that it's there, having access to it, it's a good cushion. I may not use it every day. It's probably just going to sit on that chair over there.
That's a lovely point, because we talked about this a lot, especially with my wife, because my house is full of clutter. I have books and DVDs and records and things everywhere. I like the physical media. I didn't get rid of all my physical media. And one of the reasons I like them there is I know they're within arm's reach. No one can take that off the surface.
Yeah.
I've got that stuff to hand. And the funny thing about joining a comfortable service like BritBox, it's like saying, don't worry, LOLO and Only Fools and Horses and Minder will always be there if you need them.
That's exactly
You may it. Never need them.
Break glass in case of emergency.
I might never watch it, but I need to know it's there.
Now listen very carefully. I shall say this only once. I have good news. I have come here to collect the British airmen. I expect you will be very glad to get rid of them.
You can say that again.
I don't suppose she will.
Someone said once that the reason that if you are emotionally not particularly stable or you're worried you might get a bit panicky or whatever, you need an external hard drive within reach that's got your emotions on. And the emotions might be contained in a program or a book that you had. I want to feel as calm as I did or as happy as I did when I watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail the first time. And the promise of your shelf, the reason you have books in your shelf is I might be able to pull that off and take it like a tablet.
Yeah.
Go back in time and feel that emotion again. It's a hard drive of emotions.
It's a comfort cloud.
Yes, exactly. You've got it stashed somewhere.
I would say it fulfills quite a nice role. As I discovered watching a few LOLOs getting ready for this, when everyone's gone to bed, and whereas normally I'd have to catch up on the latest brutal murder to happen on True Detective or something, to actually watch half an hour of terrible moustaches and very dated attitudes was... It was absolutely delicious.
Well, look, do not let them come in here. You speak the language, tell them to go away. Go.
Now listen, chaps. René's been awfully decent putting you up here, but you have outstayed your welcome.
We can't walk around as nuns all day.
The jellies keep trying to chat us up.
Didn't they suspect the moustache?
You think mine's big, you should see the Mother Superior's.
I wonder as well, Joel, if this is a sign of getting older when you culturally have your comfort blankets that are in the distant past. Because as you get older, you know, I remember my grandparents watching old black and white things. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's rubbish.
You could watch a colour thing.
Why are you watching that? But I'm like, oh, now I'm doing that. That's fine. Good to know. I'm getting ready.
Yeah, but it takes you back to the time of the past. It's a non-toxic version of nostalgia in the sense that it is completely innocent and harmless for you to be reminded of how happy something made you.
Yeah.
So did you like LOLO as a kid? Is the association there watching it with your family? Or?
So very much, the association is watching it with my dad, my late dad. I lost him when I was very young, and I remember watching it with him when I was probably about, I don't know, like 8 or 9.
LOLO at 8 o'clock, and the assassination plot thickens.
Need to kill the general. We have already arranged to kill the general. Do you not see that if we kill him with the pill from the till by making with it a drug in the jug, you need not light the candle with the handle on the gatto from the shadow?
Simple plots are always the best.
And there's a specific moment I remember on a sofa in a part of our house which has since been knocked down. Quite a big house, and then there was a side bit, and we lived in the little side bit, and my grandparents lived in the old house. And it's just been knocked down by the current owners. And everyone was like, oh, gosh, that's sad. And I was like, oh, great, I'm so happy that's gone. I felt like a real, erasure. I know. But I remember really clearly sitting there, lying on my dad's chest and watching Hello, Hello. And that music, him laughing, and that thing of being a kid and going, I'm going to laugh when he laughs. Right. I don't quite know why I'm laughing, but that'll get me in. And then suddenly there's a man saying, I was pissing by the door and I heard a loud bum. I'm just like, and I think that my sense of humour was imprinted. And when people say to me, your sense of humour of a 7-year-old, I'm like, well, it's Hello, Hello's fault.
That's when you learn to laugh.
Where am I supposed to find silk?
The urgent Crabtree has a plan, which you will explain.
You must go and get your hands on girls' knockers.
Laughter is collective. There's a brilliant stat that most laughter is communal. You laugh far more when you're with other people. Yeah. You're at the same stimulus, same joke, same show. Yeah. You'll sit and watch quietly on your own or on headphones and not make a noise when there are other people in the room. And Hello, Hello is a studio sitcom. There is laughter in it.
Yes.
And you would watch it because there are only 4 channels. You'd watch it with your family. And you would learn from the cues of your family laughing and the people in the studio laughing to laugh when you didn't understand the jokes.
No.
And you weren't left on your own.
You're learning storytelling. You're learning how to enjoy these things. You're learning how to enjoy culture. You're learning how to, and it obviously, again, another thing as well, which we now lack a bit, is it was weekly, so it was a Saturday night thing. Yeah. It was on, I think it was on 5:45. It was really early, and it was just that thing of learning how to go, well, all my problems, such as they were at 8 years old, or all my other things disappear, and for this moment, we will go and we will have guaranteed enjoyment. This is there is no risk here. There's no, oh, well, I'll go with you, Dad. He wants me to go with him to the petrol station to fill up. That might be boring. Or, you know what I mean? Or he wants me to go and help him with the lawn, mowing the lawn. Oh, God, it'll probably be boring. Or maybe something fun will happen, which did happen. My dad once drove the lawnmower into a river. But that couldn't happen every weekend. Whereas on a lower low, that would happen every weekend.
This looks like a good pitch. We will sell our fish. I have something, girls. I have something, girls. The crabs.
It's the guarantee, isn't it? I think it's the contract is there. This got, I think I looked up the viewing figures. This is a 14 million people watching this. Huge international hit.
Wow.
So people are going to it for the guarantee of it not letting them down. Have you noticed the pattern? I don't know if you looked this up on Wikipedia, the pattern of episodes. They did the standard thing, like 6 episodes one a week. And then I think it's season 4. There's 26 episodes.
Wow.
Because they were trying to sell it to America. Because it's written by David Croft and Jeremy Lloyd, who did Are You Being Served? Yeah. Huge international hit. Yeah. Big hit in America.
Ground floor perfumery, stationery and leather goods. Wigs and haberdashery. Kitchenware and food.
So they said, well, maybe this will work too. So they made 26 so it could go into syndication. And I watched a couple of that series. It happened to be on Gold a couple of nights ago. And it is a full-on army spy story running for 26 episodes.
Yeah.
But, of course, a joke one where nothing really happens and they just run around in circles. So you could drop it at any point and not be lost.
Was it successful? I don't know about the history of it.
The 26-episode thing failed. It didn't work. But there is, weirdly, in the middle of it, I remember reading years ago that they got to a point with writing this that they could write one in about a day because it was just a beautiful formula they'd come up with. And you should be able to. That's why they could turn out 26 of it. It's totally formulaic. And the guys know what they're doing.
They really know what they're doing. The episodes that I've watched recently to research this, you really notice how we jump to this character I love, and then there's this character I love, and then there's this character. And, you know, I haven't watched episodes for a while until I watched these the other day. And they're very short scenes. So you'll get Hair Flick and his sidekick, and they will have 3 scenes.
Yeah.
You're deliberately disobeying my orders?
No.
Show me.
No, I will not.
Why not?
Because I am teasing and tantalising you, I am going.
But when you consider you've got, it's a big, I think what I'm trying to say is, it's a big cast. There's a lot of very lovable, very rounded characters. Dismiss Hello, Hello at your peril.
Yeah.
You know a lot about these characters.
You need to, otherwise it's not funny.
Clarity.
It's all about clarity and familiarity.
Yeah.
How this works is a big cast. it moves from person to person really quickly. You know them all. And the reason they've got catchphrases, it's really funny when you read people writing about this, especially critics, they're very dismissive of it. And they go, it relied on catchphrases. And you went, welcome to comedy.
Good morning,
you stupid woman.
I shall say this only once.
Nobody attend to me.
What a mistake to make.
It is I, Leclerc.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's likely to understand how comedy works. And yeah. Comedy works by familiarity. You need to know what everyone's going to do. Mm. And they are absolutely coded. I talked to Larry Rickard about Ghosts, and he went, the great thing with Ghosts is they're dressed in the outfits that they're going to behave like.
Yeah.
In Friends, they're all wearing the same clothes. Yeah. You have to establish who they are. I said, but the captain will be a captain, and the scoutmaster will be a scoutmaster, and the caveman will be a caveman. He said, that is ensemble comedy.
Yeah.
This has got far more going for it in terms of you understanding what's going on, especially as a kid, than Dad's Army or Grace Brothers, where they're all dressed the same. Yeah. This one, you know who everyone is because they're all stereotypes. And critics talk about it going, well, it relied on stereotypes and catchphrases. And you went, with pinpoint skill.
But also, catchphrases that are just there for the sake of it and are leaned on too heavily. Yeah. Basically, you've got Little Britain, which, you know, had its good moments, but comedically, I don't think it stands the test of time at all. Whereas shows that have got a catchphrase that they get to, but on the way there's really good plot and really good other jokes, the catchphrases are a reward.
It is I, Leclerc.
Let's not forget how this was made, because it's a parody. It's Secret Army.
Yes.
What are you doing here? What went wrong?
Everything. There was a raid on the farm. The Luftwaffe police.
Was Yvette there?
No, she hadn't arrived. I don't think she even made contact with the three evaders. They must have panicked when they saw the Germans in the area.
One of them was in.
Yeah, actually, several of the cast are in Secret Army. This gets put alongside the other Croft and Perry and Croft and Lloyd stuff as, oh, it's a cheesy, sexist, old-fashioned, racist British comedy.
Were they saying that at the time or not?
It was dismissed at the time. Ago. This is a trashy BBC One thing. The weird thing, I read an Onion AV Club piece about it this morning, like the hipsters of the hipsters, and they said, contains Monty Python-style accents. And you go, yeah, if you're not from Britain, this is the same as Blackadder.
Forgive me, Herr Blackadder. Please accept my apologies.
This is the same as Monty Python.
Mm. Well, what are you then?
I'm French. Why do you think I have this outrageous accent, you silly king? Mm.
Weirdly, it is cheesy and old-fashioned, simplistic and pantomime. But so are a lot of the things that you, as a British person, think are highly sophisticated.
Yeah.
This is in a key, a parody key, that Airplane and Police Squad are in places. Not all the time. It's not that classy. It's not aiming that high.
No.
But it's not that different. You would have to be a real comedy snob to really care.
What's this then, eh?
He's one of Lope de Vega's latest plays, senor.
Toledo Tip Parade!
There is sophistication there.
It's well done. It's well done.
You cannot have a show that successful.
The trouble you have given us all. Well, take a good look, my friends. You will not see them again until after the war is over.
How many seasons did it run for? Do you know?
9 seasons, I think. It sort of ran for a decade. Watch a late one. It goes distinctly off the boil. But at the beginning of it, it's like a lot of these, watch them again and you'll be surprised how good Heidi High is, how good this is. Some of them aren't great. I think Hello, Hello stands up. I think out of the canon, it's pretty good.
That's kind of you to say to justify my ridiculous selection. But
I was happy for you to pick it. It's good.
You didn't. When we were texting, you said, pick something. And I said, Hello, Hello. And I think you mistook my Hello, Hello for me saying on the WhatsApps, oh, Hello, Hello, looking forward to do something. And then you were like, no, so what are you choosing? I'm like, no. Hello, hello.
I was just double checking you being serious. Rather, I thought you might be selling it as an ironic thing. I wouldn't be funny if I chose Hello, Hello, but I think it is a definitive comfort blanket because, as you said, the associations with communal laughter as a child.
So much
and
so.
The communal laughter of a whole country, and you will have lovely memories of this.
Lovely, lovely memories of all of us watching it. Jokes I could understand. When you're a kid, adults are a different planet. And when you watch comedy with adults and you both laugh together, you realise that actually they're not. They're the same. They're just much bigger versions of you. Older versions of you, fatter versions of you. And Alolo really was that. It was a connection between us. Let's not get into this now, but quite a shit childhood. But there wasn't a huge amount of affection, and it was all quite middle class and repressed.
Right.
So moments like that where comedy becomes your common ground are really powerful.
René, huh? If they shoot us, at least I will die by your side.
If you died in front of me, I'd have a better chance.
That's a really important thing. I think knowing there's an opening into adults and adulthood that's accessible whatever it is you're watching with your parents that you both laugh at, especially if there's adult content in it. So this has got sexy stuff.
And Follow Madonna with the big boobies.
Yeah, it's got sexy stuff. It's got violence. It's got death. Yeah. It's got adult themes in it that you might go, oh, am I allowed to watch this?
Yeah.
You do love me, don't you?
Of course I love you, Yvette, of course.
Oh, René. What do you think it will be like in heaven?
Well, I don't suppose they'll let us do this for a start.
And obviously, it's a family comedy. And I think that's massively underrated now that comedy is very niche and you watch your comedy and your kids might watch their own comedy. That past where you watched the comedy together because there was nothing on. So things needed to unite a family around.
Well, thank God for Ghosts.
Exactly what Ghosts and Taskmaster have been maybe during lockdown. People have gone, oh, we're both laughing. And especially if you've got teenagers and things, the important thing for a teenager is to declare their own separate sense of humour.
Yeah.
And the most amazing thing is that during lockdown, we were all locked up together. We found there were a couple of programmes. Maybe Community did it for us as well. Yeah. I know people who did it with Modern Family, that you found your show that you could watch together. And that's been missing. Brooklyn Nine-Nine's a good one to watch with kids because it's like this big dark pantomime.
I always feel like comedy is sort of like the broccoli of the artistic world. And we always have to go out and explain just how many levels and just how many vitamins there are in
comedy. It's so good for you. It is so good.
So many things. It's good for your family relations. It's good for your mental health. It's good for your career. You also, educationally, you learn. I mean, this is a big
thing. It sugars the pill.
Look, I mean, if you look at the top shelf here in my study where we're recording, I do need to charge you rent for the space, by the way.
Okay, fine. Is it $5.99 a month?
That's fine. Roughly. All Second World War stuff. Like, I have, and I've inherited this from my dad as well, like the Second World War fetish, which you get in a lot of very middle-class British people are obsessed with the Second World War. I am. I love it. I find it fascinating. And this was very, you know, I didn't know anything about the Second World War at 8 years old. And I, you know, you would learn about it off the back of it.
Who is this girl?
She is a resistance girl on the run.
A communist? I am a French woman fighting to free France.
Of course. We must keep party politics out of this.
Again, read the criticisms of this and they go, it was controversial because it made light of the Second World War. And you go, no more made light than anyone in a concert party was making light of the Second World War while they were in Ensa fighting it. And these guys were from that background. That's why they made it Ain't Half Hot Mum. It's at the level of Hitler's Only Got One Ball.
Yeah.
And that is how they got through. It is completely, weirdly, respectful for the reality of that situation.
Yeah.
No one's going to, they might
hit. Belittling any of that war.
There's being hit by wet celery as a punishment, but that's a kink. It's not what's going to happen. He's going to get shot.
Yeah.
Can we get on with this, please?
Oh, I nearly forgot. So they have something to aim at.
You Germans, such sticklers for accuracy.
There's no doubt they're frightened of the Gestapo. And of course, it makes light of it with a gallows humour of people who went through this.
You know, Colonel, it is quite pleasant to be a French uninsular. People smile at us.
Mm.
I think I prefer being a peasant to being a German.
You'll be a dead peasant. Herr Flick finds out we've been helping British airmen to escape.
These people who wrote this fought in this war.
Yeah.
So they are sort of allowed to do it.
Definitely, definitely. And they are also, I mean, also the other thing worth mentioning as well, there's a lot of gay people in this show. Like Gordon Kay was gay and lots of this. That's another thing we should get into is how fucking camp the show is.
It's wildly camp.
But, you know, these are people who would have been absolutely eliminated by the Nazis. There are endless reasons why the people making the show have a right to poke fun and find comedy in what happened.
Good morning, Lieutenant. This is the man that shot me. He fancies me like mad. Perhaps it is the apron.
Also, the thing that I really took from it on a sort of very basic level was, you know, again, with what was going on in my life and my family, and there was all sorts of shit going down, I could see a show like that and think, well, if they can take all the shit going down and turn it into comedy, why can't I do the same thing? And that definitely, shows like this, really chimed.
Ah, Herr Flick, welcome to my humble cafe. Let me take from you your sinister leather coat.
It's a very different show, watching it growing up, to watching a sitcom about a family.
Yeah.
And obviously, it is about family. All sitcoms are about a family. The little family of the cafe and how whether they're going to survive. And there's a mum and a dad. And that's
Rene.
And it's a little sitcom family. But as a kid, when you watched it and you went, oh, I used to watch things like this and go, oh, good, it's not about a sitcom family. It's not about my family. It's not about real life.
Mm.
It's got what Red Dwarf had or Blackadder. It's set in a funny fantasy world.
Yeah.
it's set somewhere else. So I can watch them and I will draw conclusions and learn from it and get strength from it.
Yeah.
But it's not like watching Grange Hill. It's not like watching EastEnders. I can lose myself in this world, which appears to be the scariest world possible and completely safe.
Yeah, you are distracted by all the stuff. It's a form of hypnotism. Yeah. You're not realizing you're being told about your life.
It's a fantasy. And it's got the, I love the furniture of it and the way they play with it so that they've got these phrases. Mm. I love, I don't agree with little tank.
I was just out for a little spin.
And you go, right, well, you can't have that if it's not set in the Second World War. I have a little tank.
Go on, Lieutenant, say it. What have you been ordered to do?
Drive my little tank from where it is parked into your garden at the back.
What is so terrible about that?
In a straight line. Through your cafe.
See.
Oh, brilliant. So the furniture, this is tanks and wars and bombs and things can explode. Mm. And as a kid as well, the fact that there are bombs and murder makes it like The Young Ones. Yeah. I watched an episode where Rene has a false nose that's made of plastic explosive.
Rene! Your nose is smouldering!
And he throws the nose into the street and it explodes.
Quick! It is plastic explosive!
Oh, my God!
Yeah, I want that to happen.
His nose has just exploded.
I want an exploding nose. That's pure Young Ones. That's pure cartoon, pure Goons.
The Beano.
It's all probably, in that language. Yeah. And you're watching it with your parents. And it is still about the Second World War and about something serious.
Herr Flick believes that you know the whereabouts of the sausage containing the real painting of the fallen Madonna.
With the big...
Correct. He has given me the task of trying to wring this information out of you.
I just wanted to sort of relate how it is a comfort blanket for me and it has a lot of meaning for me. And I could look back at the 9-year-old boy watching that, because of course at that age I was desperate to be an actor and I already knew I wanted to do comedy. Two things happened. Number one, I got put on a Wikipedia of famous, doing big inverted commas there, pupils from my school, right? Ex-pupils from my school. And I looked on the list, and one of the other people who went to my school was Richard Marner, who is
amazing.
One of the generals, right? So that was a moment I went, oh my God, and you see these little things pop. And then I was at a Torchwood convention, which was a TV show I did years ago. And I went to a convention, and a lot of the cast of Alo Alo were at the convention. And
Are you starstruck?
I cannot tell you. So I met Yvette, who plays Vicky Michelle. She was there.
I like the fact you had them the wrong way around there. They're real to you. Yvette, who plays the actor.
I met Kim Hartman, Private Helga.
Amazing.
I met Richard Gibson, who plays Herr Flick, who I used to absolutely adore.
Brilliant.
Sue Hodge was there as well, who plays Mimi. So... do you know what? I met them in about 2011 or 12 it was, and they all looked exactly the same.
Really?
They were beautifully preserved. I guess they'd been pickled by the joy that Alo Alo has put out there karmically, and they've been given immortality.
But also you can recognise them. They are types.
They are
types. They've stayed their type.
And they were delightful. They were in the time of their lives. And I just felt like I struggled. I wish I would love to play this podcast back to them now and say, guys,
this is what you meant.
The reason I'm here as an actor is because I watched you guys and I love you.
You will be my partner at the annual Gestapo dance in Berlin. First, there will be a banquet with the traditional boar's head, baron of beef, frankfurters, strudel, sauerkraut and oodles of beer.
Did you feel that they were happy to be back together as a gang?
It was at some convention in Nottingham. They were the happiest people in Nottingham that day, let me tell you. So those are the two things I wanted to get across, that the personal stuff as well, I guess, is so important to the comfort. And when you get those little random moments where you feel like, you know, like the universe, not to get too Noel Edmonds and manifesting, but the universe has just said, there you go, you know.
And they seemed happy. So maybe it was a little thing, it was an insight within it to say that there's happiness in the story that they will escape.
Yes.
But also these people got together and made something lovely and they're still happy to think about it and talk about it. They're still friends.
Which is a great sign.
Friends! They're friends.
At midnight, you will be expected to dance the traditional Gestapo dance.
How does it go, Herr Flick?
I will demonstrate. You put your left boot in, you take your left.
Ready to pop the question?
The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The other thing as well, which I really like about it, is Gordon Kay turning to camera. I found that
gorgeous, isn't it?
I've always loved that. I remember when Miranda did it and I was like, oh, I've not seen this for ages. And I could never at the time put my finger on where it was that it lived very deeply in my subconscious, but it was watching a lower low.
You see, I have to be nice to the Germans. They are my customers. They are winning the war. So if I am not nice to them, they will shoot me. I have to be nice to the resistance.
I suppose they will shoot him for being nice to the Germans.
I have to be nice to my wife because if she finds out I'm having an affair with Yvette, she will shoot me. And if Yvette finds out I'm having an affair with Maria, yeah, she will shoot me.
At the beginning of every episode, the one I watched, he was dressed as a burlesque dancer dancing for the Nazis.
And you may be asking why I'm dressed as a burlesque dancer.
Yeah.
That's how it starts.
What a great. You may be asking why I'm dressed as a burlesque dancer.
Do you know why that's in it? Number one, I think Jeremy Lloyd certainly had written for Up Pompeii.
Oh, you've arrived on washing day, oh dear.
And Up Pompeii, Frankie Howard, camp man who's constantly desired by women, turns to camera and tells you what's going on.
Yes.
No, it's only a little joke. Don't worry about that one. Listen. No, actually, honestly, I must look a mess. I'm awfully sorry you caught me like this and my little pinny on. I'm ever so sorry.
Number two, this is pre-streaming, so you might have missed last week's episode.
Mm.
You might have been out at Cub Scouts or at a family wedding.
Can video.
So he has to say what's going on.
Now, Otto Flick, the Gestapo officer, is having dinner in the back room. Upstairs are two German officers in their underwear because I have borrowed their uniforms to help two British airmen to escape. The pianist over there is in fact a forger for the Marquis, and the German officer at that table fancies me. And it is only Tuesday.
Another thing is, almost uniquely, let's give this credit, almost uniquely for any British sitcom, there's a continuing story.
Yeah, and that
which
is
there isn't in any other sitcom.
Very unusual.
Because they borrowed that from Secret Army. They've literally borrowed the plot from Secret Army, like Airplane borrowed Zero Hour.
Yeah.
They've stuck it over the top. So they need to tell you what's going on.
But also that moment where he says you maybe are. That's a bad answer. Well, the thing I really appreciated about it is it begins the episode and he's doing the kicks, doing the can-can. And it's all really well timed.
Yeah.
They're all dancing to his lines. He's got to get his lines. But I really appreciated the craft of that and how hard they're all working, and that's something which, again, you see having acted in comedy and acted in serious stuff. In the serious stuff, the actors are pissing around, and then we roll, and then everyone goes serious. And in comedy, everyone is being very serious, making sure they hit their marks and get their timing, and then they piss around when the cameras roll. So it's something I've always observed, and you really see it there, like the craft of it. You just timed those looks and that dance with your lines and you've hit the mark and you've looked right down the barrel and you've been really funny and now we cue credits and you're
let's
like,
appreciate what's going on. I mean, you're watching something. Everyone in here, particularly the writing team, the production team, those people, they've come from live theatre and stage shows and army stage shows. And the cast, what this is a pantomime.
They've done rep as well, haven't they? They've done all the stuff.
This is a show. This is a pantomime. It's got the rhythms of pantomime. The turning to camera is from pantomime. That conspiracy with the audience is pure panto. And when this is exported overseas, other countries go, wow, this is brilliant. Where did this come from? And you go, oh, you don't have pantomime.
Yeah.
This is a perfect pantomime with all the things that make pantomime work.
Mm.
This is a drilled military unit to make you laugh.
All our cultural, these mini institutions that we have, like rep and stuff like that, and panto.
Yeah.
And like I say, when you read it, you forget how instantly it goes straight through the filters and you just understand it. And him looking down the barrel, and then tragically as well. And there's so, again, there's so much to talk about around Alo Alo. Because Gordon Kaye, of course, was the 1987 storms.
Yes, he was very, very badly injured.
Very badly injured on his head, and he had big scarring, and it affected his eyes and all sorts of stuff.
A piece of wood about that long, whatever that is in centimetres, with a sharp point, thwacked through the windscreen and embedded itself there. Yes, you can see the heart. Don't do close-ups, please.
And his mood as well, much like when with Rick Mayall, of course, who went flipped on his quad bike.
Yeah.
So he went back to doing this high-pressure stuff with, as I understand it, quite serious mental health issues because of those injuries that he sustained. He couldn't remember his lines. He had no patience.
But the show must go on.
The show must go on. In that old school, you know, where this is the show, we're on tour. No one can step in for you. You're narrating the whole thing. And also not particularly famous for anything else.
Yeah.
He did that. And I'm not sure there was any other big roles either side.
Yeah, he's totally associated with this one role and he's commanding in it.
Yeah.
It's his show. That's why he talks at the beginning. He is in the same position as the dame is in a panto. He's there. Mm. He's commanding. It's on his terms.
Yeah.
It's only an handful of my friends here. I thought you said the old village of Nuvion was turning out to mourn my passing.
Nuvion Rangers are playing away.
I love the fact he's this slightly sort of strange-looking, tall, gonky bloke who every woman loves. Yeah. He gets to play that part. It's such a good joke. The men can't leave him alone. The women can't leave him alone. And the joke being, for British people, French people are just, they all just love each other. It's just sexy.
So, like, when you see the bit when Gruber, who fancies him, and all Gruber's, and I hadn't watched it for years, right? And I put it on, and there's just a bit with Gruber looking at René, and he does this thing with his mouth. He just puts it to one side, and it slants up. It's the sexy smile thing. And I just started laughing because I just remembered. And, you know, we have to be careful about this. I'm not laughing at the idea of a man fancying a man. And I wasn't as a kid at all, in fact. I was laughing at how it was so unrequited and so absurd and so, like, the statuses were all wrong here. And
it's a Daphne and Niles. It's a will they, won't they.
You French people, you have some very nice jewellery.
Thank you.
I have a trinket that is much admired.
Really?
Can I show it to you?
If you must, yes.
I remember as a kid kind of wanting Gruber to get René, because he seemed to be worthy of him. He's a nice guy.
Very conscious of again, you know, these shows, talking about the gay thing, you know, I think I knew what it was at that age. This is like the 1980s. The big Colin plot was in EastEnders, and my parents were horrible. They would say horrible phrases about gay people. We didn't know any gay people and stuff like that. It was vile. And I can remember being on his side. Do you know what I mean? I can remember that, not presenting them as absurd or pompous or cartoony, but lovable and real.
There's a picture inside.
Oh.
Look.
Oh, yes, what... What lovely long blonde hair.
Yes, isn't it? Unfortunately, he had to have it cut off when he joins the army.
It sounds like I'm leaning a lot into Alo Alo, but it was there. It's how I felt. I really remember
that. There's a strange respect for everyone's sex drives in this.
Yes!
Kink is fine.
Yvette will be in room 6 in 1 hour with the vet celery and the flying helmet.
And the feather duster?
2.
Queer is fine.
Are you one of them?
Really, it was very lonely on the Russian front.
Everyone, and the joke being that we are used to sort of sexy French farces.
Let us have one embrace.
Oh, very well.
And they've done an English version of sexy French farces that everyone's doing everybody.
Why has Yvette got on her pay shaving soap?
And it's all fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of 60s and a bit wild. I remember there's a sort of theatrical camp around it, which is also to do with theatrical gay. And I remember growing up, my parents weren't particularly in favour of queer culture. Mm. But we loved Julian and Sandy and Round the Horn and things. And there was that thing that everyone had come from the theatre had then gone and made programmes and TV programmes and radio programmes which featured gay subtext and gay characters in a much more open way than the actual wider culture had them. Because you kind of went, this is just theatre people. They're
how
fine
absurd
with
it was that things like Section 28 and all that stuff was going through
same
at the time when all our cultural icons were obviously being gay and brilliant.
Is he one of us?
No, he's one of them.
Please, do not tell anybody!
This is the inclusion of everybody in that cast, because the lusts for Renée have to come from all angles.
Yeah.
I find it really hard to read it and go, this is all the things people say, it's racist and sexist, and go, no, weirdly, it's not. It's playing with those ideas. Mm. But I don't think it is. It's repeatable and watchable and enjoyable without any cringe, which is weird, because it should be worse. In a way that you might watch the worst excesses of Carry On and go, they're a bit leering things. Yeah. Weirdly, this doesn't feel it. It feels like everyone's completely fine with it.
Yeah.
The cast look happy.
That's very, very true. That's very, very true. The thing I keep thinking about, which made me laugh but then feel bad for laughing, was the running joke with his wife. When it's so funny when she said, I can't be outside with all these German, all these soldiers. They will ravish me. And Renée just looking straight down the barrel, like how could they possibly be attracted to her? Which is such a cruel joke because there's nothing wrong with her. But it was beautifully played.
But it's all done within the rules of theatre.
Who is that? He will ask. It is the rich widow Artois, they will reply. Oh. How young and slender she looks. I must pay my respects to her, he will say. And maybe tomorrow morning he will be at my door bearing a beautiful bouquet of sweet-smelling roses.
Provided his guide dog can find the owls.
It feels formal. It feels like if you put opera in this, it would be regarded as commedia dell'arte. Yes. It's so traditional. You know that Gordon Gay and Colman Severa are fine. Yeah. They are as attractive as each other.
Yes.
But the rules are that the man in this thing must hate his wife in a Basil and Sybil kind
of
way.
If she was disgustingly ugly making that joke, you wouldn't laugh.
No.
But she's not. She's clearly absolutely, you know, she look normal.
She's an attractive cabaret performer.
Right. So the idea of, so Renée looking cross makes me laugh at Renée for being cross, not at her for being ugly. And that's his it. And that's really clever.
They occupy slots like chess pieces. They have roles. They have moves they can do.
Yeah.
And you will never be confused by that. And you will drop in. And even though they are borrowing the plot of Secret Army, no one's going to change or grow. No one's going to die. They threaten death. None of the things that will happen in drama that would leave you discombobulated or lost or distressed.
Yeah.
They are locked into like little models on a Swiss clock onto their tracks and movements. They will never surprise you.
No.
And that is delightful.
Wonderful. And yet there are still so even though they're locked in, there are still so many, like a game of chess, infinite moves.
Infinite games. Yes, totally. They built the most perfect machine.
Yeah.
And they could set it going every week, and it would take them a day to write it, not because they were lazy, but because they'd worked that machine so it would not fail.
Yeah, the preparation was there, like painting a room. They'd
you
done
can
all
write
the
fan
masking
fiction.
Tape.
You can write fan fiction. This works as well as Star Trek does. The way that Star Trek fan fiction is an unbreakable crew.
Yeah.
It's an unbreakable team. They bounce off each other perfectly. The skill is in the building of it, and also not fucking it up. Don't fuck with the system. Don't fuck with the traditions.
Yeah.
What part of France do you come from?
I am half Etolian.
Etolian?
Etolian. I was brought up in Nipples.
The other thing as well, which we haven't really talked about, is the accents.
Oh,
which is a
what
really
a good joke.
So obviously you've got the English policeman who
Crabtree, Arthur Bostrom.
Oh. Who I think not so long ago, he had an Insta account.
And he was very active on social media.
He had to
very funny, very nice.
But he was writing as
Oh, it's Crabtree.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
It was. I think it was something like Officer Crabtree on Twitter.
Oh, and
they made him take it down. But so the accents, the idea that in order to speak French, you just had to put on an accent.
I don't speak French as such, but I gave it a kind of European bit of an accent.
Yeah.
I just found absolutely thrill. It was almost a sci-fi element to that. Like there was a universal translator that was happening. And I know that's a ridiculous thing to say.
Are you expecting us by any chance?
What does he say?
I don't know. I don't speak English.
What?
But it felt like, again, and this is what's key to good comforting stuff, you're going into a secret world.
Yeah.
You are 2 days too soon. Too soon, huh? What's he going on about?
I think he wants your watch before he lets us in.
There's not many people in on this, and you're sort of almost eavesdropping.
Yeah. And then the joke that Crabtree comes in and he's...
he can't speak
the
French.
The great
so
joke
good.
Is it's a joke about English exceptionalism. He hasn't bothered to learn the language. He's at risk of dying or exposing people, and he hasn't bothered to learn French. He's a man shouting at a Spanish waiter to ask for an omelette.
Oh, it's that English idiot who thinks he can speak our language.
Good day to you.
I mean,
it's such a good joke about the English.
Make no mistake, this does not come from a place of English superiority.
No.
This is very much...
It says we're arses.
Yeah, with stupid moustaches, you know, and it does it so, so well.
No, we must wait until the war is over.
But the war might go on forever.
No, the British will set us free one day. It may take years, but they will come.
Hello?
Yes, but it will take more than two before I tell the wife.
I read an obit of Jeremy Lloyd this morning, and I won't shame the writer, but it said, Crabtree speaks in a mangled franglais for no apparent reason. And I went, you're the only person on earth who didn't get that joke.
Can I get you a cognac?
No, I am not allude to drunk when I am on dirty.
And there's a strange thing. People are always happy to say they didn't get a joke in a way they would never say I didn't follow the plot for something.
That's absurd.
There's no shame in not getting comedy and blaming the writers for getting it wrong. And I went, no, it's one of the greatest jokes in British comedy.
That
Crabtree.
It is one of the most... It's like an iconic...
Yeah. Children understood that.
That's my point, and that's what got me into it, exactly. But the sort of... The idea that it was for no apparent reason, that's like saying, well, this drummer's in this band and he's hitting the drums
for
no
reason.
Apparent
reason.
Like, it's part of the orchestra of the whole thing.
And knowing he's going to come, he's a favourite bit.
Yeah, and that's very true as well. And you can, you know, that's great writing, when you can get to a moment where you go, right, let's get Crabtree in.
Yeah.
All he's got to do, Joel, you know you're winning in comedy, right? and, you know, from doing stand-up, I've had this a few times, where you've got a bit where you don't even need to speak.
Yeah.
You just stand there.
Listen very carefully. We shall sing this only once.
shine on, our east moon.
Up in the school.
And Crabtree can open the door and just stand there, and you'll cut to Renee, and you will laugh.
Yeah.
And that's very rare.
Shine on, harvest moon, for me and my ghoul.
Look at the way this is staged as well, because we're talking about people who've got stage training and this being a classic studio, multi-camera audience sitcom. One of the things that's great about it, which is it has got in common with Blackadder and Monty Python, is these are review-trained or stage-trained people. So when someone's acting, everyone's acting. Mm. It's an ensemble. And when you put them in the frame, they're all doing something. Mm. So someone can be standing to one side waiting for their line, and you'll go, oh, delight.
Can't you entertain him?
How can I? My salary isn't even good enough for soup.
Erflick of the Gestapo is paying his bill.
Renee, Erflick says he's going to search the building. What? He will find a painting of the fallen Madonna by Van Klomp in the cellar.
No, the painting has gone, but so too are the uniforms of the colonel and your captain.
If they find the colonel and the captain in their underwear, this could make the Gestapo suspicious.
Oh, and that's interesting. I think that's something we've lost more recently because of budget.
Yeah.
You know, you're not paying extras. You're paying lead characters who will all be charging their day rate to be there. Oh, he's in this episode. So she. Everyone's in that episode. And in those days, those contracts, you'd be getting paid handsomely to do that.
Yeah.
And they just don't have budget. These days, what you'll do is say, well, let's take these two people and put them in a room. And well, it's all right. We'll set this outside with some people walking past who aren't in the show. And you look at the cafe in a low, hello. All your friends are there. And that... And you look at the cafe,
it's reassuring.
It's like one of those cartoons you see on the roof of a dentist with a million different things going on.
Yeah. Busy.
It's busy, and there's a thousand things going on.
What it reminded me of a lot watching this again, and it has got something in common with it, is Asterix.
Mm.
And it's the busy village. There's lots going on. You can watch people coming in. It's like reading a cartoon as a kid, that the frame is busy with people.
And this comes back to the central premise of this fucking podcast, which is it's comforting because I'm leaving my world behind.
Yeah.
I'm leaving the stuff here and the rainy Saturday night in 1989. And I am in France during the war. This is the magic of well-written, good art, is that the clarity of it, it just works. The willing suspension of disbelief, even an 8 or a 9-year-old, it's done.
I'm afraid there was a slight delay, Colonel. The tailor had to go to a bar mitzvah.
A Jewish tailor?
Oh,
whatever that means.
What's lovely about this is that what's wrong about it when you read criticism of it is what's right about it.
Like, yeah, that's right.
It used all these stereotypes. Yes, because it was sophisticated enough to know that the audience knew those stereotypes, knew they were stereotypes, knew we were playing a game. It played completely by the rules of how comedy works, how theatre works, how farce works,
yes,
how panto works. It's not made a mistake in using a series of outrageous comedy accents.
What a mistake of the maker.
That's part of what they built to make it work.
Yes.
It is a completely sealed world. And don't forget, it's meant to comfort you. It's meant to be comforting. They have taken Secret Army, a tense drama show. They have borrowed, I didn't realise I looked this up, they borrowed the plots and storylines of Secret Army. The Forger plays the piano. They borrowed the characters from Secret Army. It's completely Airplane, complete Police Squad.
What are the legal ramifications of borrowing Secret? Was that also a BBC show?
I don't know, but they didn't use the actual, but in terms of borrowing the plots and things, they said, look, it ain't broke, don't fix it. They've taken something which was tense and edgy and dramatic and for grown-ups.
Yeah.
And they've boiled it in a lovely comedy cauldron to remove all the threat.
Yes.
So it has the same thrill and stories as Secret Army, but you feel completely safe.
And
how brilliant's that?
And they're failing.
Yeah.
They fail and they fail and they fail. And do you know what, when they fail? They shrug and go, oh, well, we're still here in this world. And that is real life.
Yeah. It's so comforting to know.
Fail. We're not going to get out. The airmen, every now and again, maybe once a series, the airmen would make it. Or there's a lovely moment with the airmen stuck in the bin lorry and they're supposed to be dropped off. Very complicated, very, very involved. You know, proper sort of Akeborn-esque. You come over here, you do this, you come then. People getting it wrong, people failing, which is what we do in real life.
Yeah.
And to be able to laugh at failure is, I mean, the most British thing, the most important thing.
Will there be anything else, Hans?
Yes, Colonel. We shall require a pair of pliers and some rubber hose.
Oh, no, not the pliers and the rubber hose. No, I will tell you everything I know.
Just so we can get the gas poker working.
It's an incredibly comforting thing to find out that the great drama that you sometimes feel you ought to be living, where there's movement and change and success and a place to be heading. What sitcom tells you, especially sitcom that is based over the top of drama like this, it tells you that you will end up in exactly the same place you started off. You won't change. Your friends will always be... Your friend who you're annoyed about because they won't share their cake, they'll never share their cake. Don't expect them to change.
Yeah.
This is a lovely thing that says, look, the little tribe you found yourself fallen with, whether they're your family or your friends or your workmates, they'll always be themselves.
Yeah.
Don't expect them to change. And also, don't expect to end up heading somewhere amazing. The only thing you're meant to be doing is escaping, and you're always tunnelling out and coming back where you started.
Yeah.
That is what life feels like.
God, enjoy futility, guys.
Because you'll
it's
be
all so futile.
Running around in little circles.
The plan is as follows. I will commandeer the French refuse collecting vehicle. I will drive the vehicle into the camp. I will be in disguise. You will pardon my asking, but will not your guards be suspicious to see a rubbish cart driven by a nun?
It is regarded as a failing of this, but only a failing if you're comparing it to the drama Secret Army. And I'd like to point out something. Neither you or I have ever fucking watched Secret Army, and I'm not going to, but I will watch Hello, Hello, because the drama isn't as much fun as the comedy.
How many podcasts are there about Secret Army? Don't write
fucking
in.
None. No one's picked it.
You can escape by climbing into the drone poop. Point one, there is no room for the two of us inside the poop. Point two, we already have a plan to escape.
You mean to escape?
Do not tell me how to speak my own language. Now stuff yourself inside the drainpipe and go.
Very rarely do you watch it and go, well, that's a bit much. And yet, spoiler, it is a bit much.
Yeah.
The things they're coming up with are absurd and ridiculous. But there's something about...
Are you telling me there wasn't really an exploding nose in the French Resistance?
But why is that? Like there's a thing you say, you know, when you're writing comedy and you're trying to write a sitcom and the sort of the pushback you'll get is, well, what show are you writing here? Are you writing the cartoony version, or are you writing a flashback thing, or are you writing a thing where anything can happen? And, you know, this is a cartoon, Hello, Hello, because anything can happen, and yet you never have that moment. It's the big rule, isn't it, with comedy, where you go, oh, well, I don't really buy that.
General von Klinghoffen!
Batteries have been stolen from a miniature submarine. Whoever has those batteries in their possession will be shot.
René, which one of them has the batteries down his trousers?
This sets out his audience contract at the beginning. The moment that René is dressed in something stupid and he turns to you and tells you, so you go, oh, that isn't quite real.
Yeah.
Also, him turning to you, he is telling you you're safe.
Yes.
Because this isn't real. So it doesn't matter if the Nazis are doing something horrible. These are the real Nazis. They are going to kill you.
Yes.
You're going to be shot at dawn. But don't worry, I'm not going to be, because this is a play.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, that's very sophisticated. That is Shakespearean. You're leaning out and saying, you're safe to watch this. You understand the rules.
Yeah.
I find the thing with relentless realism, rather than the joyful abstraction that this comedy can do, is it's kind of saying, we don't trust you.
Yeah.
Whereas the moment anything says, here are a series of quite complicated rules about accents and caricature and plotting, and the audience go, yeah, I got that.
Well,
an eight-year-old gets it straight away.
This is in, I think it's Robert McKee, isn't it? Good story. A two-year-old will understand a good story.
Yeah.
If you're, it's on you. It's all about your clarity and your rules that you need to define. And this show does that exceptionally well.
It never lets you down. It tells you what it's going to do and then it doesn't.
Yeah.
And people look at that and go, well, it's a bit predictable. And you go, how hard is it to make something surprising and predictable?
Exactly.
That is the craft.
Exactly. So and it always comes back to land. And it is, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant.
Do you have the money?
Yes, we have the money. Do you have the sausage?
It's unbreakable as well. I've got a lovely story. Julia, my wife, we were in the countryside one day in a village, and nailed to a lamppost was, the Finchingford Players will be presenting Hello, Hello as their Christmas show. And it was like June or something. We went, yes, yes, yes. And Julia phoned everyone she knew and said, we're going to go see Hello, Hello in a little village hall. It'll be incredible. And she phoned up for tickets, and the woman went, oh, no one's ever phoned this early before. And they got the first three tickets, and they sat at the front row. And I said, what was it like? She went, absolutely incredible, because it's unbreakable.
Yeah.
You can cast it with enthusiastic amateurs.
Yes.
And the machinery is so perfect.
It's Teflon, isn't it?
And I said, was it much different than the TV? She went, not different enough.
Yeah.
Because they've set it up so that you can do it.
So did they just do one episode? Is that what they, or one bit?
There was a stage play version of it that I think the guys wrote, it could go around and it could be given to Amdram companies.
Right,
but the point being, and I said, well, it's pantomime. The slightly middle-aged tubby guy in the village got to be
miraculously attractive to everyone.
And I said, was he loving it? She went, he was loving it. And I think that's the achievement of it, is of course it's down to this incredible cast.
Mm.
That's your blue chip cast.
Yeah.
But the second division players can still do it, because the game just works.
Because it's a game. It's a board game. That's it. Absolutely. It's Cluedo, and doesn't matter really. I mean, of course it does. They're all brilliant. But you're absolutely right.
You're seeing the best version of it possible. The platonic ideal of
Hello, Hello. Yeah, exactly.
But you could do this in the playground.
Amazing. And I wonder, I mean, you know, there's a test, right? There's a test you should put in your next book, Joel. How many sitcoms can you see a village saying, we are putting on Mrs. Brown's Boys?
Yeah.
You know, how many? I mean, there's an elephant in the room as well. Mrs. Brown's Boys, I guess you could compare in terms of what the role of the show was. Saturday night, studio, accessible, commercial, mainstream. And yet Mrs. Brown's Boys, I know people love it, but
I can give you a secret way into that. I went to go and see it live. And I had to go and see it. To believe it. To go and see how it worked.
Yes.
And I suddenly went, oh my God, this is a village hall.
Yeah.
And the deal is, there's the dame. The dame's in charge.
Yeah.
And the rest of the cast, let's be honest, some of them, they're just his mate and his dentist and his accountant. And it's not a disadvantage, because it's pure panto in the sense that, oh, it's the postman.
Yeah.
And I think there's a thing about comedy that people don't understand, is that people love to watch their friends do comedy.
Yeah.
To be able to see through the character to say, that's, well, in terms of panto or in terms of Mrs. Brown's Boys, that's clearly his mum. That's his wife. That's his dentist. I can see they're putting on an act.
You want to be as close to them as possible. You want the connection. And to know them. Yeah, and to know them. But if you see them as real people, both as actors and as their characters, you feel even closer to them. And the closer you are to someone, and then you've got good jokes, the better it's going to work. Because then you're sitting around a table in a pub together laughing.
Yeah, and there's a communality and a trust and a knowing of people. And some of it is saying, very often in comedy, you kind of go, well, I don't want to lose myself in a comedic performance. You can be an Alec Guinness or a Peter Sellers, and that could be like, you're an astonishing chameleon. Mm. But really, I want to watch Rick Mayall being Rick Mayall.
Mm.
I want to watch people be themselves. I want them to be. What Carry On is a commedia dell'arte with a series of village players who always play the randy old man, the big tall guy, the sort of sexy woman.
Yeah.
You can see the people playing those people.
Is it a reach to try and suggest that Hello, Hello was a crossover point where where as Carry On began to fade away, there was still huge amounts of yeah. the legacy of Carry On and all those things you've just described, but also a slightly newer way of doing comedy yeah. as well, you know, looking down the barrel and slight, maybe more sophisticated jokes.
It's a very dark Carry On. Carry On never did a wartime one that had all this stuff in it.
Yeah.
And it pushes it towards Mel more Brooks story. And Lubitsch and story.
Carry On didn't really
no.
give a shit about story as much as Lolo no. really cared about good story because they knew that was the way to...
Yeah, and they're borrowing that story. I mean, as a masterclass in how to write comedy stories, I've always said this, you can do as many jokes as you want to on the top line, that's your melody,
yes.
but the bass and drums have just got to be really straight yes. underneath it. So there's no point at which they say they're going to murder him and instead he has to have sex with a pantomime horse.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
mean they're going to murder him.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
don't
yeah.
you don't kill him by I mean, they don't even do a thing where they might kill him by dropping loads of jam on him. They kill him with bullets.
yeah,
they threaten.
Yeah.
So all that stuff stays real. So
the sit is very, very important.
Yeah.
A dog has just apprehended the Gestapo sausage. Arrest him!
But going back to this idea of the LOLO test, so that's interesting, which we are now going to copyright.
Yeah.
So Mrs. Brown's Boys, you go and see it, obviously with the main guys and the actual actors doing it. But what I'm fascinated by with Julia watching LOLO yeah. with new actors, how many sitcoms could yeah. you get a Red Dwarf with only four people, get four locals, and put them in? I don't think so.
No.
But LOLO, I think because the story is, there's something about it, and I wish I had the intelligence to grip onto what that is, but there's something about the world that, that you can do that, but you can't do that with, I don't think you do it with Blackadder because Rowan Atkinson is so important.
Yeah,
and this isn't to diminish someone like Gordon Kay, but it's just the...
Maybe it's that it's a parody. Maybe there's something about yes. this which is like an end-of-term review where you're doing a funny version of Batman.
Yes.
As in, because it is...
We also know Second World War dramas.
And again, let's go back to saying this is regarded in a hierarchy of comedy as somehow beneath Monty yes. Python. You went... All the Monty Python films are a thing, a story you knew from school, yeah. Jesus or King Arthur, yeah. and a load of people come in with outrageous accents and ask about the silly
exactly
hats on.
Oh, I mean, we all know
this is lowbrow compared to that, but this is still, it's not the University Comedy Boys one.
That's
this
right, it's class. Again, you know, this yeah. this fucking shadow that sits across all British life and comedy, especially, is class.
Yeah.
So they were all the Oxford, they were all the Cambridge boys doing Monty Python, loved them, of course. But this lot weren't. They were working actors who weren't necessarily the same.
And the writers, David Croft is posh and went to a nice school.
Hmm.
Jeremy Lloyd left school at 13. He had a horrible, brutal relationship with his parents, was sent away to a horrible boarding school, was pulled out of the boarding school by his dad and sent to work in Grace Brothers. He was a shop worker from the age of about 13, 14. So there's a lovely class mix in this, in the writing. There's a nice posh guy who the BBC will trust.
Yes.
And someone who was, Jeremy Lloyd was a jobbing actor. He's yes. in Beatles films and things like that. He was
Exploding
in,
Nose, Please.
Yeah. And yeah. there's this mixture of, and also that lovely thing of they were both been through the war where those classes were mixed up
yes.
and you fought alongside each other.
Yes.
And there's a lovely... earthy, these people know how to get a laugh
because yeah.
they have done it for a bunch of tired squaddies and they've done it in music halls. They have earned their stripes.
Now that's interesting, isn't it? I wonder how many, and when I think about it, my grandparents, we lived with my grandparents at the time in the 80s, and my grandfather was born in 1898. He fought in both wars. And he, I don't
Did he start them both?
He
They're his fault. I suspicious he's in both of them. I'm just saying, I mean, is the clue in plain sight?
He moved to Korea in the 1950s. Oh, my God. Went on a gap year to Vietnam. Oh, shit.
He's just trouble. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
And they, you know, they were in their sort of very old people wing of our house. And they were surrounded by very old books about the war, which they fought in, and they never came and watched any of this stuff.
Right.
So I wonder, much as I'm trying to reach for this sort of idea of communality and all recognising
right.
it, in our house, certainly, it felt there was an element of me and my dad giggling at what had happened to my granddad, which is a brutal way of putting it, but it was like we were being naughty by
yes.
laughing at it.
And it is, there's that sort of tweaking the nose thing that Spike Milligan dressed as Hitler all the time.
Yeah.
And maybe there are people who didn't want to laugh at it.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, maybe it's easy for us to say, maybe the reason we didn't laugh, we could laugh at it because it was set in France and it wasn't our experience. Whereas if you did a sitcom about the resistance, you know, something you still don't make jokes about in France now to this day, you know, their wounds are very long lasting. Maybe it would have been a very, very problematic thing.
I think critics get this wrong. It's not set in France in the resistance. It's set in Secret Army.
Mm.
It's set in the games we played in the playground. It's set
yes,
in.
Yes, it is. Yes,
it's set in the films we watched. And there's a lovely shift. I think Al Murray isolated this. Said there's a shift in how the war is depicted in British war movies from them during the war depicting it as heroically as possible.
I should like to add that there isn't one of you that I wouldn't be proud am honoured to serve with again.
Afterwards saying, we're slightly traumatised, we'll talk about death a bit more honestly.
The only villain is the sea, the cruel sea. But man has made more cruel.
And then it hits about 1965 and it becomes a place to play.
You are about to share every fantastic step of the most daring mass escape ever conceived in the mind of man.
I got three Shermans outside.
His name's Oddball.
A Sherman can give you a very nice edge.
From the company that brought you The Dirty Dozen and the author who gave you The Guns of Navarone, where eagles dare.
Yeah.
Like kids do, like where you go, you're dead. And we grew up going, the Nazis are just targets, they're baddies to shoot.
There's no
actual politics to it. There's no actual sense of, it becomes a playground where there's a memory that there was this big adventure we didn't go on, but it's consumed entirely through battle. Picture library.
And that's just time, isn't it? People like my grandpa's probably not the best example because he was just, like I say, very, very fighty. That's why he couldn't sit with us. But I wonder.
He would have started a war downstairs. So his own war, one-man war.
The War of Monmouth in 1989, Second World War, it sits in, across all our lives. Certainly my generation, you know, both my grandfathers fought in it. My mum's dad was a spy and he was one of the first Western soldiers into Berlin in the hours after the Russians had gone and killed, and Hitler was dead, and they'd burnt Hitler's body. And my grandfather got into Hitler's bunker and was there when it was in the hours and days after the Russians had gone. And this was a family story that was handed around. And then my grandfather had fought in both World Wars. So it was a sort of way, it sounds absurd, but I guess to a 9-year-old, that's what it was, of thinking, well, it does all look quite fun.
Yeah.
I'm glad they had fun. Do you know what I mean? It was a sort of connection.
You missed the great adventure is the thing. I mean, you're a similar generation to me. And the big thing about being, if you came after the boomers and you came after the greatest generation, all you were told is you missed it.
Yeah.
And one of the things you can do is either give no respect to that generation or have all the fearful stuff about it, as it sounds frightening, made safe.
But that is, Joel, this is, again, taking it back to the personal. This is the story of my life. I'm 8 and 10 years younger than my brothers. So by the time I turned up, I missed the good times, the good holidays, all the nice stuff. My brothers were getting ready to leave uni by the time I became 8, 9, 10. And so that really resonates. What's just happened? I feel like psychologically, I've always walked into a room and everyone's just gone. And I'm like, hang on, what's just gone on here? That is my state of mind. Yeah. So this feels like I was seeing it. I was watching the CCTV.
And a safe packaging of it. It's another way of processing collective grief and anxiety, but you can process that through comedy. People did at the time. If you're aware of things like the Wiper's Times, the newspaper that was printed in the trenches.
Yes, this is the Ian Hislop did the play about it.
Yeah, and it's great. You can get a volume of it and it's full of the Onion-style jokes about it. And these people were moving a printing press they'd salvaged from a French town, from trench to trench. You're going, I thought they were just being shot at all the time. No, they had enough time to make Private Eye in the trenches. Because laughing at drama is a human response.
Actually,
it's a good thing to tell kids to go, no matter how scary it will be, if there is another war, you'll be laughing as well.
Hitler has only got one salad!
And yet, and here's the great thing about it. So you get all the comfort, and it's also got the great rule of any good theme tune. You can sing the name of the show over the theme tune.
Written by the writers, so they knew what the rules were.
Hello, hello,
little riff. Hello, hello, on TV.
It's a rule, right? Yeah. You've got to be able to do that.
So here we go, the same refrain, the final encore. You are my love, my only love, once more. You are my love, my only love.
That's very important. Also, it was my phone ring for about 10 years. And again, it was not so much a dog whistle as a fire alarm to any other Hello, Hello fans, because doing stand-up comedy from the age of about 20 to 30, I think it was my phone ring, and finding other stand-ups who went, I love that show.
Brilliant.
They were quite few and far between because of, you know, cultural comedic snobbery. So that was always nice. But also the fact that I can now watch it for the purposes of comfort, for the purposes of preparing for this podcast. Within 3 minutes, I'm going, oh my God. Sending you a picture. I sent you a picture, didn't I, the other day of their plan to jump over the wall of the. But, you know, sure enough, here's a barrel. They're going to put a plank over it. Rennie's going to jump off a roof.
Yeah.
And
1, 2, 3. We need a stronger plank. Good thinking.
Yeah, the guy's going to fly over the fence. And I'm already snorkeling.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
That's ridiculous.
Mm.
And there is a real problem with comedy that when you say, that's ridiculous, someone goes, yes, so I shouldn't have done that. And you go, no, that's why they did it.
Yeah.
They know.
But also...
they did it deliberately. That's how it works.
The thing that sits across this, you know, it's a pretty powerful word with World War II paraphernalia, escape, right? Escape.
Yeah.
The beating heart at the middle of the show. And with a lot of sitcoms, of course, is escape. But there's a difference. A lot of sitcoms, people are trapped. But escape is a more desperate word. They are desperate to escape their marriage, their war, their country. They need, or they have escaped and they need to get back to their country. Escape, escape, escape. And as a result, with escape comes desperation.
Yeah.
And with desperation comes absurdity. If I am desperate to get out of the house and someone says, the only way you're getting out of the house is by putting a plasticine blow-up nose on, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
It's the desperation. And so you need all that reality to make the comedy happen.
That was a narrow escape.
Narrow escape? We are locked up in a prisoner of war camp.
The cafe opens for dinner at 7.
And your mother has the keys to my till.
That's a brilliant point. It's a farcical comedy set at a time when the desperation will be at its height. People are trying to escape. The airmen are trying to get back to Britain, but also Rene is trying to escape through sexual fantasy.
Yes.
Helga and Herr Flick are trying to escape. They're trying to find joy in darkness, all of them. And they're trapped somewhere where they're trying to steal moments of joy or escape or hope within a really dark situation. And you can be any age and understand that.
Exactly.
There's a strange thing I always used to find with anything set in the war, that the actions of the Germans or the prison guards or whatever were so readable as what teachers were like.
Yes.
Because you are under an oppressive regime at school in a way that maybe your parents were at work. And the analogue for your life is constantly looking for tiny bits of joy and escape within a rigid system.
Yes.
Occupied France is a pretty good analogue for the average tough school.
Yes.
Or a horrible job you don't like.
Certainly the version of it presented by all these dramas, definitely the reality, I'm sure, was horrific. But what's presented by Lo & Lo and all the dramas about it, films and stuff, is you see it and you connect with it straight away. And, you know, there's this thing, isn't there, with a sitcom, chase your characters up a tree.
Yeah.
And we start knowing, culturally, having that knowledge of they are up a tree right now. And so anything they do, you can't jump the shark when, you know, you are so desperate. And as a result, you're right, it means that when you do feel that sense of escape in your life, like you say, if you're at a school that you don't like or your family is oppressive and there's a lot of shouting and it's miserable, you feel like you can be absurd. You can do stupid stuff as well. It's a permission slip. That's what it was. It's brilliant.
It's the perfect thing to offer comfort when you're desperate.
Yeah.
We're all desperate.
Yes.
And the only answer is hello, hello. What a powerful message. Thank you for bringing the greatest comedy ever made. I think we proved that.
Sold.
No arguments. Lovely.
Thanks, Joel. That was fun.
Comfort Blanket was presented and produced by Joel Morris for the Cheese and Pickle family of podcasts. Find us on social media and don't forget to like and subscribe.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.